Now, on both sides. So we're finally going to talk about Inyan Chassidism. Last week, I mean, it was maybe kids in, we spoke about Rosh Hashanah, and all kinds of different particulars about Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah women's Shabbos, the idea that Rosh Hashanah is they would make Hashem a king, the significance of judgment on Rosh Hashanah. And then we also started to speak the Medrash. And this Medrash that we had in last week's shiur really is the cornerstone of the Hemshech. Page Beis is the cornerstone of the Hemshech. Because in that page, the Rebbe introduced us to the elementary point, which is, originally the Rebbe wanted to create the world of Midas Adin, and he saw the world wasn't going to make it, so he hybrided, he mixed in Midas Harachamim. And I explained to you, that the Rebbe goes off on this tangent about Kos. And this tangent about Kos takes two Maimonim, this Maimon and the next Maimon. What is the tangent about Kos? You have to understand that we're not talking about a physical cup. We're talking about a Ruach Nisim cup, a metaphysical cup. The distinction, the difference between a physical cup and a non-physical cup is very simple. A physical cup just takes. The cup that our Hemshech is talking about is a Ruach Nisim cup, which is a Makabel and a Mashpiach. It takes and it gives. And that's very critical in the omit, in the pneumius of this mind. So the Rebbe is now going to explore with us the concept of a cup. And the concept of a cup, as the Rebbe is going to explore it, is going to amount to this. Every makabel doesn't only take, it gives back. And you could make the argument that what the makabel is giving you back actually exceeds, is actually bigger and more and greater than what the makabel gave you in the first place. Okay, this is how you have to understand the next to my model of a series of allusions we have first. Isha, husband and a wife, then we have Seichel and Dibur, then we have Eres and Kalim, then we have Nisham and Guf. And finally, of course, we have Yitin and Teda, where the Makabel is not simply receiving, it's also giving back, and arguably, what the Makabel is giving back is greater, deeper, higher, and more than what the Makabel Mashmir gave in the first place. So the first discussion we're going to have is about Elagim, it's about Pinyin Yitin, it's about reproduction. And the example that he gives is from an Isha. So let's begin to read a little bit on the bottom. Page Beis, three lines in the bottom, and it's time for everybody who doesn't have to get themselves safer. Or be it or in you, to explain this concept, Mashan Ishamas Yisrael, the Yid, or Knesset Yisrael and Maila, and the source of Yidna Ziyar and Malchus of Atilus, the crying Beshem Kais, they're called a cup. Or in you, the Pshat is as right. In Yadua, everybody knows, Bakadish Baruch, or Knesset Yisrael, the crying Beshem Chosn Makala. The Eibish that are Yidin or Knesset Yisrael are the same idea of a Chosn Makal. In other words, Hashem is the Mashpia, and we are receiving from Him. He's the Mashpia, and we're the Makabel. But, like a husband and a wife, a husband gives and a wife receives. What's the point of what she receives? Not that she should have it. She should reproduce. She should have children. Or as I gave you the Dugma last week of Tzedakah, the Adam Chesis, Chitim, Tum Chesim, Chesis. The man brings home grains of wheat, but you can't eat wheat. It has to be ground into a flour and kneaded into a dough and baked in an oven. So you have to make it into ready-made food. So the makabel, the woman, receives, but she makes something out of it. He married us. We are like the Eibishter's wife. Now the Rebbe talks about the Inyan, the passions. For example, the physical relationship between a man and a woman. The man is the mashpia and the woman is the makabel. This is not such a comfortable piece to learn, especially with Rachman. But to tell the Maisa, I think it's helpful. I forgot where I heard it. I didn't see it printed, but I heard from Mashpia. The Baal Shem Tov met Arizal. And he told Arizal that how come he made the whole Kabbalah based on the relationship between a husband and a wife, a man and a woman? It's not seriously. It's not modest. So the way the story is told is Arizal took the pen, and he gave it to the Baal Shem Tov and said, Shvai Du, I said, hey, you write. Usually you come up with a better marshal. Shvai Du. But the whole Kabbalah, the whole Feder Ishtashlis is a series of Yechudim, of marriages, of a Mashpia and a Makabel. And of course, the Makabel receives, and she procreates, she creates the next world. That's this, what's called, say, the distortions. So the Rebbe talks about the relationship between an issue between a husband and a wife. Now, the first, let's say, 15 lines of the page, talk about what the husband gives. And then, beginning with Omnam Mehashpoas Hatifa, which is about the middle of the page, the line that begins with the word Chilosa, where it says, Omnam Mehashpoas Hatifa, this is where the Rebbe goes on to say that Taka man is Mashpia. But with a man as Mashpia, is not a baby. It's a theoretical baby. It's a baby in essence. to create a baby, you need to have a recha, you need to have a womb, you need to have a makabel, which the woman has, and she procreates. So there's two points to this morning's class. In other words, at our quarter today, if you get from the bottom of the page till about 12 or 13 lines from the bottom, the line that begins with the word b'koyach, where he starts talking about the Buddha b'dugma kozois, in these two-thirds of the page, there's two essential points. The first point is the idea that a man is mashpia tipa, and the second point is that the tipa is not a baby, the tipa is not a thing. To create a thing, you have to have a rechem, you have to have a makabel, a womb, that begs, that creates, that develops the fetus, the baby, until you have a fetus with miyatma, a complete child. So we're going to read a little bit. We're not going to read, we just want to read a little bit. Says that in the relationship to Isha, the man is the mashpia. Shenim shechtipa me'amer. He's a drop, there's a seed, a point, that comes from the brain of the father. Obama Lubish, in which is invested Atzmus, the very essence of Chabad Mamish, of the Chabad of the Father. Now I want to point out, when we say Atzmus, Chabad, we really mean Atzmus, Atzmus. The very essence of a person is transmitted to his child in the Tipa Zeta, in the point of the Zeta, the seed, which is transmitted to the Nekev, to the Makabel. Atzmus Chabad doesn't mean Chabad, it means the Atzma of the person Mamish, yeah. Why Chabad? Okay, has the kasha. I can make up a teretz. Let's leave the kasha. The kasha is better than my teretz. Okay, do I have bein hashpos haseichel min avot talmud? We all know the distinction between the way a teacher teaches a student and the way our husband is mashpia to a wife. That when a teacher teaches a student, she shafaruch is a spiritual sustenance, which the teacher gives the student. As the Rebbe is going to say in a moment, the only way the student can receive it is the student already has brains. A student who doesn't have any seichel can't get anything from his teacher. Why not? Because the teacher is giving him only ruchnis. And the ruchnis has to have, like a fire, has to have a candle to burn. If there's no mind or brain on which to settle, it goes away. On the other hand, the b'nashpah satipa, the seed, the point, which is mashpia from the tchar, from the male. She ashpah gashmis, it's like a physical ashpah. Right? But in that ashpah gashmis, you have the actual child, you have the essence. The ashpah satseichel. When the Rav was mashpia Talmud, it's seichel, he should ishpah nakahor. It's only a ray, a reflection of the wisdom of the teacher that's communicated. Levad alone. The teacher is not giving the student brains or a mind. He's simply giving the student information. And the information has to land in the student's mind. And the proof of this is, a student doesn't become a new person as a result of what his teacher gives him. The student lacks intellect. He doesn't have the capacity for intellect in his personality. Even though the karma, notwithstanding. How much a teacher will give him, it's going to help not at all, it's not going to help at all. You can teach and teach and teach, but you can't give people brains. There's no such thing as a brain transplant. If he's got the intellectual capacity, you can fill it with information. Huh? So far, that's there. If the student does not have a mind, you can't do anything. Why? Because what the teacher is giving the student is simply some of his light. He's not giving him himself, he's giving him some of his light. The light has to rest. It has to rest on the student. Or the student's got to be a person. He's giving with the tipa, he's not giving the woman, he's giving his child. He's just passing through the woman. In the tipa, there's the essence of the father, the brains of the father, and everything else about the father, even things about the father doesn't know he possesses. He's giving over to the child. I mean, biologically, they call it the genetic code. Yeah, in the tipa satchad, you have the essence, the biological essence. And in ruchni, they, of course, add the spiritual essence, right? What are the differences between biology and teva? Biology believes that a person is made up of physical strands of DNA that's tightly wrapped together in the nucleus of the cells and so on and so forth. And teva says that that's true, but that's only the gashmis, it is in the shaman. The father gives his child the tipa, he's giving him the gashmis, the DNA, the gashmis, the essence. But along with that, he's giving a piece of his person, his nefesh, of his ruchni, the essence. So the child, when that seed becomes developed, is a metzias b'shnei yashmis. If the teacher would be giving the student his brain, even if the student did not have a prior intellectual capacity, that the seichel should develop brain. Therefore, we have to say, the teacher teaches the student, he's giving him light. Light has to have a place to rest. If the student has brains, it rests on the capacity of the student to receive. If the student doesn't have that capacity, it's wasted. Ma'ash, ain't came barash bar gash mili tipa. Now we talk about tikkun. Hadanish babuhus hameichin shalei mamish. The father is giving his child his own brains, his essence. Atchamei l'nefesh shalom. That can ultimately produce a complete form, a complete soul, and a complete body. B'meichin l'chol kechas nafshi with a mind. And all the other intellectual, all the other tools of man. Hakeil kasha l'keil. All of it in its entirety. Ayinasa babein. Me'ba'ab. The son has it like the father. Shemeila b'dei melei mamish. The son is exactly like his father. V'chuli b'adav neisha eltsim. Nimshach v'ashpo azu. When a father gives a tipa, see the point. In that you have his essence. V'lachein mizeh. Nishava mizeh. This produces havoya chadash, a brand new existence, b'dei melei mamish, which is the likeness of the father. V'chuli and so on. Okay, stop here. Rabbeisa. Has anybody ever learned the sugya of what's called in Chassidus Oir v'shefa? Huh? Yeah? Where did you have Eretz Shafa? In Chassidus? In Tafshir, in Chassidus. Oir v'shefa is a classic sugya of Chassidus. In a lot of places, you'll have it in Shem Samach Vogin. There's chukas. It's a classic sugya. The sugya about my money, my mother, mother. Oir v'shefa. Oir v'shefa addresses two forms of hashpah, two ways of communication. And it's very interesting how Oir v'shefa works. But the basic rule of Oir v'shefa, and by the way, we're going to be discussing this more in the subsequent Mamorim, is that each one has a certain mila and a certain chesaron. The mila of the first is the chesaron of the second. And the mila of the second is the chesaron of the first. Okay? And I guess the most philosophical way I could articulate Oir v'shefa is to say passive communication and active communication. Can you think of an example of passive communication? And can you think of an example of proactive communication? Think. Rav and Talmud, how is he giving proactively, that is mashpia, and how is he giving passive? Hello? Give me an example of a communication from Rav to Talmud that's bedarach hashpa, and an example of a communication Rav and Talmud that's bedarach oyer, it's passive. Give me an example. The Peshtus is a difference in a teacher who's teaching his student and a teacher who's talking and the student is listening. In both cases, there's a communication, right? But in one case, the teacher is locked in. He's engaged with his student. He's giving him. In the second case, there is no locking in. There's no connection. There's no locking in of the teacher with the student. The teacher's talking, the student has to be in the vicinity, it's absorbing the information. Now, what's the rule? If you think about that analogy alone, what's the rule in those two forms of communication? I'll tell you that it's very simple. When a rabbi is teaching a student, what he's giving is deeper. And it's personal, it's connected. But it's measured, the teacher measures how much he can give the student, so the student will be able to get it. He's not going to stomach it talking to the wind. When a teacher is just talking, and the student is in the vicinity, the teacher could be saying deep things, things that he would never dream to tell his Talmud. Now, the Talmud is getting a lot more in terms of what the teacher is giving, but it's not pneumistic, it's not lacking in, he's not absorbing it in the same way, because it's not meant for him, it's just there. Well, so what's the ma'al of Oid and what's the ma'al of Shefa? What's the ma'al of active teaching? Active teaching is Shefa. Passive teaching is Oid. Active teaching is the connection to Mashpia Makabe. The greatest strength of Shefa is the term mashpia and makabe, they're locking in. Or to say it a little bit fancier, in a true relationship between a mashpia and a makabe, he's not just giving him ideas. He's giving him a part of himself. If you have a real mashpia, and he really talks to you, he's not just giving you ideas, he's giving you a piece of his neshama. But what he's giving you is very measured, very quantized, very encapsulated, very measured to your capacity. That's the chesed. The ma'al of Shefa is that there's a locking in of teacher and student, it's only for the teacher giving a part of himself. The chesaron of Shefa is that what they communicated is less. The ma'al of Oid is that there's far more communication. He's giving Hashem a lot. But it's called makif. It's shitchi. There is no connection, no intimacy, no locking in of makir and mashpia makar rather than Talmud. It's just out there. Okay? I'm going to give you an example of mashpia makar. And this example is Sarah Yechasidis. Okay? The Gemara says that Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the writer of the Kapara of the Mishnah, used to say, the fact that I'm smarter than my friends is I was able to see the back of Rameya. If you remember, if you ever learned in the different places in Chas to talk about this, the Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbeinu HaNasi, how they lived in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, time of the Tanoim, the Rav sat, and the Talmidim stood. So it was hard to see it. And there was different madregis, they sat on five pillows, and then four pillows, and he's going to have to say the Masudim. One of the things about the Lord, the Tanoim, is it was very different than it is today, that the greatest students sat in the front of the room, not like nowadays. The greatest students were closest to the Rav, and then it went gradually out. So the student who stood in the first row saw the Rav. The student who saw the second row would probably see the Rav, but the Rav went gradually further. Now they pushed it under. They couldn't see him, they couldn't hear his voice. So Rabbi said, I was in the first shura, but I stood to the back of Rav Meir. In other words, you were Tamid and even greater than him, because they stood there right in front of him. And the fact that I'm sharper than the students who stood in the second row, and the third row, because I at least saw his back. There's a concept in Chassidus, in Torah, called Chachmas Adam Tanuf. The wisdom of a man is written on his face, his countenance. The greatest example of Oyed in Rav Talmud is seeing what the Pasuk says, when you look at the face of your Rebbe, in the face of the Rebbe, you have all the Torah of the Rebbe, you have all the light of the Rebbe, all the Chachmas, all written in his face. And a person who's a very sensitive person, who sees the face of his Rebbe, it says in Sfarim, it's brought in Chassidus, in Samachtes, the boys are learning downstairs, that when you listen to a teacher and you can't see him, you can grasp so much. When you listen to a teacher and you also see him, seeing his face changes the quality of Ashba. Because when you're seeing his face, you're seeing what amounts to all of his wisdom. So what will be the difference between Oyed and Shefa now? Shefa will be the spoken words. The teacher's communicating to his student. He's measuring his words and he's applying it to his makabel. He knows his student. He's lacking him and he's giving him. Oyed would be the idea that you see the face of your Rebbe. When you look at the face of your Rebbe, you see all this light. The problem is you don't know how to interpret it, right? It's the infinite wisdom of a person is written on his face. Okay? So now, let's use philosophy now. What's the Mailas Ha'oed and what's Chisaron Ha'oed? What's Mailas Shefa and what's Chisaron Shefa? Listen very carefully. The Maila of Oed, when you are getting somebody from a Mashpia, the Darach Oed, you're getting everything or a lot more? What's Oed? I'm sitting here and you're looking at my face. You're getting everything that's written on my face, but you can't interpret. Oed has an enormous amount of Mashpia. When somebody is receiving from the Darach Oed, he's getting everything. The chesaron of Oed is that it's makif and it's chitzonius. When someone is receiving from the Darach Oed, that person is not giving, he's taking. And when you're taking from somebody without them giving, the neshama investment that is necessary for a rav to really teach and for a student to really take is not there. When a teacher talks to a student, he's giving him not just information, he's giving him himself. When a teacher is just there and the student is looking at the holy countenance of his rabbi and drawing light from it, he may be drawing an enormous amount of light, but it's not, there's no locking in, there's no connecting to that amount. So my loss of aid isn't the amount of the hashpah, you're getting so much more, and ultimately you can say you get everything. The chesaron ha'ayir, the flaw in aid, is like aninya chitsoni. There's no locking in, there's no premium thing, you can actually mishpia in the cup. My loss of shefa, conversely, is the opposite. The my loss of shefa is that Rav is talking to you, and he's locking in with you, and he's connecting to you. Even though he's giving you a small piece of information, in that information you have him. The Rav is nitfas in dashboard. And the chesaron in shefa is that you're getting so much less. So to say it now in a few words, the ma'ilav er is that you're getting much more hashpa. The chesaron er is that it's a chitzenizdik hashpa. The ma'ilav shefa is that you're getting a real connection between Rav and Talmud. And the chesaron er shefa is that you're getting much less. Now, the rule is, er is exclusive of shefa. And Shefa is exclusive of that. You can't have one. If it's a Hashpah Pnimis, it's going to be limited. And if it's going to be a Hashpah, which is Blikvul, it's going to be Chitzenis. You can't have both together. That's the rule of thumb. The rule of thumb is that Oyed and Shefa are like two sides of a magnet. They repel each other. If you're getting Hashpah with that of Oyed, you're getting a lot, but you're getting Chitzenis, Makif. Like sunlight. Sunlight is called Oyed. You have the whole Shemesh in it, but you have no Shemesh at all. It's just the Ha'ara. If it's Shefa, you're getting Muhus Dover Ma, you're getting a part of your Mashpia, but it's limited. Does anybody have any questions on what I just discussed with you about Oyed and Shefa? Don't be afraid. Certainly. Because when I am giving you, I'm giving a piece of myself, It goes into not just your brain, but into your essence. A relationship between a real Rebbe and a real student is a very special relationship. It's not just information. It's mamish neshama, and they get together, they're linking up. You learn to get some kiddush tesvav, but you say the hashpah, right? The hashpah is based on the measure of the love. It's a very deep involvement. It's a locking in. It's an engaging of two people. So even though the Rav is giving him whatever it is that he's giving, what's chapsagir? Remember. Even though the Rav is giving that time of love, he's giving, but he's giving a part of himself. Okay. You mean the hashpah b'darach olish? This is what they call a chassidus. Avraham Shneim Kaimin Shtagel Rabbi. There's no such thing. You can be a keli for a hoyer. You have to be. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. That's a very special thing. Yes. The Ami says that's also shef. But be'erach to when the hashpah is meant for you, it's a muscle for you. Because when a rabbi is mashpia to a Talmud, there has to be the kelim of the Talmud. No, the Talmud doesn't get it all. When he hears what the rabbi is saying, everything is as a tumult. He hears it, it makes him feel good, it makes him feel frustrated, he doesn't have it clearly, it is and it isn't. He has it and he doesn't have it. There's one exception to this rule of exclusion. The idea that Eir can't be Shefa and Shefa can't be Eir has one exception, and that's Kippah. When a father produces a seed that has in it the essence of his child, he's giving him everything. He's giving him his whole brain. The whole brain is found in that people. Okay? And at the same time, it's called Shefa. The tipa of Zeta, the seed, the pintala, which is going to create the child, has the whole father in it. Everything about the father, inside the mommy, he suggests that there are things in the father that he gives his child that the father may not know himself that he has. The Chazal tell us, Yafa Kerech Abad Mikerech Ab, it's possible for a son to go better than his father. So Chassidus teaches, Yafa Kerech Abad, his father is better than his father. But how come the son is better than his father? Mikerech Ab. He got that from his father too. Because it's possible for a father to have Kerech as he never revealed, and his son reveals them. So when a father is giving a tipa, he's giving everything. Now, a hashpah that gives everything should be in the category of Eir. Because that's the rule. When you're a mashpia, when you're proactively giving, you're giving a limited amount. When you're giving everything, it has to be passive. The exception to this rule is Tipa. Tipa combines Ma'alas Ha'Eir and Ma'alas Hashem. In the seed, in this pintala, you have the whole father, and his father is giving himself. There's nothing passive about it. So, in effect, what I've done for you here this morning is demonstrate. You have three types of hashpah. Eir, to the exclusion of Shefa. Shefa, to the exclusion of Eir. And Tipa, which combines both. In the Tipa Zara, you have the whole father, which would be Lachayri in the Eir category, and yet it's hashpah. Now, I said that the kitzer, but did that click? Did you understand that point? I mean, this is what tells here in this manner. Verstandenly? Yitzchak, you got it. It's Eir because it has everything from the... It's Eir right because it has everything from the Father. And it's Shefa right because it's not passive, it's proactive. He's giving it. And he's giving it takah with his whole neshama. Has the malice of both. But it has a couple of limitations. Shmuel, you following? It has a couple of limitations. Tipa has a couple of limitations. Number one, it has to come in Gashmis. It has to be a physical seed. And there's a reason for it. And the reason for it really is... How do I say this? You know what the mal of Gashmias is? That it's dumb, everybody knows that it's dumb, and it's never going to be smart, and no one's even going to attempt to make it smart. The reason the etzem of a father is communicate to his child in a tipa, in a physical tipa, is dafka because a physical tipa has no malah. Because the if this would be a ruchni is like a thing, ruchni says, hey, I'm smart, I'll figure this out, I'll understand it, and you ruin it. In order for the father to give his whole essence to his child, it has to be given in such a form, in such a garment, that the garment shouldn't interfere. Right? Can a person talk out his whole essence with words? Impossible, right? Because there's brains involved. Brains has a mailer. The mailer does not allow the essence to come across. Can a person give his whole essence in emotions? No, emotions have a mailer. Emotions is not a vessel for the essence. Gashmius has no maile. Because Gashmius has no maile, it doesn't interfere with the essence nature of the communication. The reason, the only way to communicate essence, as a father does in communicating his essence to his son or to his daughter, is precisely because he's giving it in Gashmius. What's good about Gashmius? That there's nothing good about it. And because Gashmius has no maileis, the keeper doesn't try to define itself. It just is. In a ruch nizik ha-ashpah, the ashpah defines itself, and it limits itself. So the first limitation in tipa, since tipa is combining two maileis, hofchias, sayin ha-asa'er, that everything in the father is communicating, sayin ha-asa'er, that it's a pneumatical communication, Rav is giving down. The only way that can get across without compromise is it comes in what's called a levush ne'elam, tipa. You want an example for this? It's an example, but it's an example. The only way to reveal the deeper secrets of Torah is in riddles or in metaphors. Like Tzadik Zechidus, you have Mishlei and Shirashidim and Tehelas, the three svarim. The deepest svarim are the svarim that are least comprehensible. Because you have Mishlei Shleime, what's Mishlei? The allegory is metaphors of Shleime. And then you have Chidei Shleime, what's Chidei Shleime? The riddles, what's the difference between a Mashal and a riddle? A Mashal has a psalm, a Mashas. What's a riddle? Nothing. Yeah, you haven't done Achim Shimshon Agibah. He gave riddles to the Goyim. It's nothing. A riddle is Rechek Ma'oid. It's very far. And a riddle, Yitzchak. I've met my quote already. A riddle is extremely far away from the idea. And therefore, in Achida, in a riddle, you could communicate intellectual depth that's more than you communicate in a Moshe. Because when you put something in a disconnected form, the disconnected form interferes less. And therefore, us is communicated more. You understand what I'm trying to say? The more indirect the marshal, the more you can communicate secrets in it, because it doesn't interfere. It doesn't know to interfere.
Does that mean that the lower worlds compensate like the lower worlds
from high? Ultimately, that's true, but that's a different concept. Let's not mix apples and oranges. But the point is, when you want to get something very deep across, the biggest problem is that the medium of communication shouldn't define itself. Because of the medium, that means the thing in between. If you use it to get across the idea, defines itself, it doesn't allow you to say what you want to say. It interferes, it's intra. A tipa, its maila is, and it has no maila. It doesn't try to classify the essence, and that's why the essence is communicated. Okay, so let me just say this one more time. We are discussing oil and shefa, and I'm telling you, oil's maila is that I'm giving you an enormous amount. Its chisaron is that it's shallow. I'm giving you a lot of information, but I'm not giving you me. Shefa's maila is that there's a connection with your mashpia and makabo that's real. But the chasarin of shefa is that it's very measured and limited. Tipa combines both. You're giving the essence, giving everything, and you give, it's a hashpah. It's a real giving. But there's a few limitations. In order for the essence to get across, and it to be midera, shefa, maybe you're not listening, requires a gashmi diketipa, not a ruchmi. That's point number one. But come on. You know what, the right word is etzem. It's ruchnis, but it's not, see, ruchnis is a form. In the tipa, it's bederach etzem. Just like gashmis is a mitzvah, ruchnis is a mitzvah. In the tipa, the ruchnis is still a non-mitzvah. If the ruchnis is a mitzvah, you couldn't give it all. Bederach shef. The way the ruchnis is still yet theoretical. It's not even ruchnis yet. It's going to become ruchnis. Because it's not, somehow it comes from ourselves. It's not interfering. It's not interfering. It's not obstructing. I'm a teacher, okay? And I've been a student. So I've been on both sides of the fence. The worst thing is to have a student who's pretty smart. Why? Because 60% through the class, he thinks he has it figured out. And he stops to think, and he stops listening, and he loses everything. A student who doesn't think he's that smart pays attention till the end, and he gets it. A student who's brilliant is another story. But sometimes being a little bit smart is worse than being less smart. Because the smartness of the student becomes an obstruction. It doesn't allow the teacher to give more, as much as she wants to give. It limits the capacity because it defines itself. A guy who doesn't know doesn't try to define itself. That's the mile of a mashal rochel. You don't hear, Lashon Sidur, you don't hear the light in that mashal. So more light can be allowed in. If the mashal would head on Lichtigkeit and feel like it would define itself and limit itself. Okay, you'll think about it. I think you might forget the question. Following? I'm trying very hard. Okay, now, Rabbi Yisai. There's another limitation in Tipa. The first limitation in Tipa is that it's a Gashmi Zikadina. And the second limitation in Tipa is that it's Helam. Right? Look at a seed. What do you see? Nothing. Today they take that seed, they put it on the microscope, and they see all the DNA strands, and they've sat down and spent billions of dollars to decode the genome of the human DNA and to explain how exactly which part, each part of the strands of the DNA represents what. Yeah? They know so little, they don't even know how little they know. Yossi Kunyan. Okay, Shlok isn't there. Right? But when it comes to Ruchnis, they know nothing. For sure. Right? In a Tipa, you have the essence of a child. Essence of the father. So first of all, it has to come in a Gashmi Zika thing, which is remote, removed, so it shouldn't interfere. And second of all, it comes to heaven. You need a Rechem, you need a Makabel, you need a woman to create a baby. Seeds are not babies, they're seeds. Seeds are planted to produce crops, to produce new fruit. In the seed, you don't have the new fruit. You have the potential for that new fruit. And it's not hidden. It's in a level of essence. It's even more hidden than you do. In the Tipa, you have the whole father, or the whole child, whichever you're more comfortable with. But it's at a level of being essence. So Tipa has Gewaldike Milus, Medendike Milus. The first mile of Tipa is that you're giving everything. The second mile of Tipa is that it's Ashpah. The two limiting factors of Tipa are, number one, it has to come Dachi and Gashmi, number Rochik, so it shouldn't interfere. And number two, it has to be called in Chassidus, Helam B'Yetz, not Helam, Helam B'Yetz. Okay, so this is a summary of this sugya of Tipa. Questions? Ruchnis is a definition. It's like being a little bit smart. And when you're a little bit smart, you can't help but think. Your thinking limits how much you're going to receive from the student. If you wouldn't think, you'd get more from the teacher. If you wouldn't think, you'd get even more. And it's inevitable. You can't do anything about it. It's just the way things are. Everything that has a form is defined, and everything that, you know, they say the expression, your glasses are shaded. You see something happen. You meet another person. We all have biases, right? Where do those biases come from? They come from ourselves. We can't change that. We all look at the world through our own eyes. Yeah? If the tipa has a muhus, has a personality, what the av is mashpia to the ben would reflect not what the av is giving, but what the tipa can tolerate of what the av is giving. Since the tipa is a gashmius, it doesn't, it's nothing. It has absolutely no predisposition. So it allows the whole etzem to get across. But it comes with that achal. Okay, so I've given you some very, very, so to speak, structured information here. We're not saying bad. We just say it's not functional, right? The tipa is not a baby. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying it's a reality. Okay? So let me just review this quick. Just say the words, and I want to go have one more point to discuss. The mile of aid is that you're giving everything, the chasad nevera that's continuous. The mile of shefa is that I'm giving you myself, but the chasad of shefa that I'm getting is very little. In tipa, you have both miles. You're getting the whole father, and you're getting his essence. The two limitations of tipa are that aid has to come in gashmis, and aid has to come in. One at a time, A keli for tipa? Because nobody is brilliant enough in the essence. There's no thing as brilliant. Bebchinas bligul. Lost at love of zanah zamizach. It's a distinct zanah. What was it's chitanius. It's passive. I'm not giving, you're taking. So you're getting a lot, but you're only getting the light, you're not getting the person. Now, Rabbi, if I look inside, the line that begins with the word Tchilosan b'Seifan of Meshkasa b'Da'anal Omnam. It's maybe one line before, but would be the middle point on the page. Zog de Eilek Rebbe Omnam, however. Maybe you talk inside Omnam. Zog de Rebbe Chaimotchai, you with us? Yeah? Be'ashpoas hatipa atzma. This seed alone, lo yiyem izayilo. That's not a baby. It's nothing. It's the potential for a baby. Ki im kishenim shachas lo mislaveshes berechem nenukum. Unless it's niklat in the rechem, in the womb. I'm going to say something like that. Okay, it's mislabeshet berechem anukv, it's invested in the rechem and the womb of the mekabel. The keletes, she absorbs that tipa, what they call in America today, it's implanted. Oz nasa mizehi lovin. That's going to produce a child, the demon that's going to be in the likeness of the father. Okay? And if it's not going to be implanted in the neutron, what's going to come from that TIPRA? Zero, nothing. It's going to remain a TIPRA, and then it's going to become laser. Okay, now, so I don't have sufficient time to give you the long version of this. And we know that we're going to have this later on in the next mime at the beginning, which is going to be a very difficult study. So I'll talk about this later. But I owe you a whole discourse on the following. Reproduction, having children, whether it's human or it's animal, or it's plants. A pitota is not tava. It's not natural. Every event of Pilyavidya is a nes. In the Chassidus they say that in every event of Pilyavidya there is a manifestation of what's called Koyach Ein Sof, the infinite power of Hashem. Why? Because Torah has laws of nature, right? You speak to a physicist, you speak to a biologist, you speak to a chemist, they have laws of nature. What are the basis, what are the criteria for the laws of nature that are found in biology, for example? Predictable, repetitive events, right? Every time you throw a rock off, it lands, it's called nature. If sometimes it lands, if it doesn't land, it's not nature. Quite often, very high percentage, if there is a yichud zavanukva, there's going to be a heroin, a pregnancy, that's going to produce an offspring, and therefore it's considered a natural event. Torah has a different criteria for nature. And one of the criteria for nature that Torah gives, it's very important that you people understand this, one of the criteria, one of the chukim, one of the laws of nature found in Torah, and this is really from the Rasag, it's interesting, the Rambam, the men of Ruchim, and the Munzadeh argue, in Chkina, this is one of their arguments. And this brings on like the combination of something. The Sadi God says, the moment a Dashmiyatika creation is created, it starts to die. This is called in science the law of entropy. Everything is in the consistent movement towards disorder. Everything that exists is deteriorating. From the moment they wish to create rocks, they started to weaken. From the moment they wish to make planets, they started to weaken. The moment they wish to make molecules of water, they started to decompose. Everything that is in a constant state of deterioration. That's a fact. Things are constantly aging. There's two exceptions to that rule. And both of those exceptions are categorized in Torah as miracles. It's not considered a natural event. Even though it happens all over the place, wherever you look, you see it. It's not, the fact that it happens recurrently does not mean it's Torah, it's still an event. Torah should say that every single planet and every single star should be coming apart, should be breaking apart. Should be crumbling. Because they wish to create it, now it's getting weaker and weaker. Zav the Gemara in Yerushalmi, and it's brought in Chassidus Mutashturim, that Svar HaShamayim, the heavenly hosts, the heavenly bodies, are Kayomim B'ish, they're not aging. They could last theoretically forever. Now I know you guys learned in physics that the sun in so many billions of years is going to burn out. But Hepech HaTev, Apid Torah, Svar HaShamayim, the heavenly bodies are forever. Kayomim B'ish. They are strong today as they were, they're not deteriorating. Chassidus says it's not Tavah. Al pi Tavah, the heavenly bodies should be weakening. The Galgalim and the Gechavim should be weakening. The fact that they are not weakening is called the Keach Ein Sof. There's an infinite power of God invested in the natural bodies of the moon and the stars and the sun and the spheres of the heavens themselves that forces them to retain their same freshness and youth without aging. So if you look at the moon, what is the nature of the moon? That it's deteriorating. It's getting weaker and weaker, it's smaller and smaller every second. The Eibush just superimposes a Koyach Ein Sof that it should be Kayamin B'Ish. The moon should remain in the heavens. What does Ish mean? Ish, the man, the body of the moon does not deteriorate. That's the first exception. And the second exception is what's called Svar HaAretz, earthly bodies. Earthly bodies do not last forever, they're born and they die, but they're kayamin b'min. They have special preservation. People live forever, but people as a kind are forever. Lions live forever, lions as a kind live forever. And that's hepech hatava. What would be natural? I thought natural would be. A lion is 4 years old, and he has a child. The child, when it's born, should be like a 4-year-old lion. When that lion is 4 years old, now that lion is 8 years old. When it has a child, that child is born like an 8-year-old lion. Biologically, as developed, which means that the third generation should be weaker than the second generation. And the fourth generation should be weaker than the third generation. It's called entropy. Things should constantly get weaker and weaker and weaker. Only look. The fact fact of the matter is, the kings are Kayamin Bimin. The alternative, the opposite. In Tzvah Shemayim we say Kayamin Biyish, they last forever. And in Tzvah Haaretz we say Kayamin Bimin, they have special consistency, they don't age. Children are born the same age that the parents were when their parents were children. I know you guys are savvy enough to know about Bali and this whole Mishigas about cloning. The whole premise of the experiment in cloning love, that they took adult DNA, the DNA of a grown-up, and they implanted that in the nucleus of the cell of a fetus. And they wanted to see, when that baby is born, will it be like a newborn, or will it be as the age as his mother was when they took the DNA from the mother? And it's complicated. Bali is sick, Bali's not having a normal life by any stretch of imagination. But the pastor, she was born a baby, she wasn't born out. Even though they took adult DNA, and DNA is biological, that's not neshama. Chassidus talks about nefesh and neshama, which science doesn't know about. The child was born not like an adult, but like a child. This is hipech hateva, it's contrary to nature. How can an adult person produce cells that are like a baby? But they do. And it's a special creative that is not considered by Indian TV, it's considered a nest. That's why after 100 generations, babies are born that are the same as the first generation of babies. They're as young and as healthy and as strong. And as smart, no questions. Okay? So understand this. A piteva, the heavenly bodies should be crumbling, and each generation of children should be worse than the generation before. It's the exact opposite of what evolution teaches you. And it happens to be a scientific theory called entropy. Entropy means the nature of everything is that it's going towards disorder, towards destruction. Our children are born like the parents were when the baby parents were babies. And when they have children, they're also going to be like their parents were when they were babies. This is considered in Torah Nes. The basis for this Nes is a concept called Korach HaEinsof. An infinite power of Hashem which is invested in the world. And it's invested in two different ways. In the Tzvah HaShemayim, it's invested in a way that affects Kayam and the Ish, that the stars themselves last forever. I know that you'll read in physics, astronomy, that stars are weakening and being born and dying. But it's Hepech HaTeva. A potato, Chazak, who came about, and the Ish to made a certain number of stars in front of the world, and they've been that way for the last 6,000 years. What are they seeing? They're seeing the way the Ish to made it 6,000 years ago, and it hasn't changed. But it's in the process. The Ish to made it in a way that's in between, it's not mamish aspire, and it's not yet, it's no longer a planet. And therefore, they're perceiving what looks like the birth of a star. What they don't know is the Ebishter made it this way, and it's been this way from the beginning of time. But time is only 6,000 years. See, when astronomers study the development of stars, they speak the Chachilah in tens of thousands of years. Things don't happen in 15 minutes in the heavens. You know, babies are born in 9 months. Stars are born in 100 million years. You understand? And if the world is 5,000 years old, ain't no birth, and no death. So they just give an alama. When I say that there's Zayin Alamo, and it's a nest called Chazakum Kemibarim, Kayamim Be'ish, the actual stars remain. The second miracle, which is also a Terech Ein-Sav, is the reproduction in Tzvah Haaretz, where animals are born and die, plants are born and die, people born and die, but there's Kayamim Be'min, there's a species, that means the species lasts. So the law of nature of Torah is that every generation should be weaker than the generation before. Now here's the point of this argument. Where did the Eibush to plant this Terech Ein-Sav? Not in the Mashpia, not in the father, not in the seed, and so on. In the Makabah, in the Nukum. In the woman, in the near. Why? I don't have a lot of time, but in the kids it is because of Malas Habitah. The Makabah has Malas Habitah. To create the new child, and that child should be as young as the parent was when the child, when the parent was born, is a Kerech Ein-Sof. That Kerech Ein-Sof exists in the mother, not in the father. And I will continue this in Mitzvah Hashem in another shiur.